From the Draco Vista Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, unlocking secrets of writing, conversing with masters of the craft, and just having a lot of fun. It's the Dragon Page, cover to cover.
Hey, greetings everyone to another Dragon Page. I'm Michael R. Menengay.
And I am Michael Stackpole.
Yes, indeed. See, we told you we'd come back.
Yeah.
That was pretty easy. We just turned it off and came back again. So
don't reveal our secrets.
I know. Sorry. The magic of radio.
Yeah, really.
we wanted to do at least a couple of them for you here because we had a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and kind of get caught up on where things have been in the 2 years since we've been doing stuff. So.
And I do think that, we talked about it in between the break, and I do think that there's a good possibility we'll continue doing this.
Sure.
It may be on a limited basis just because the money's not there.
Yeah.
I just can't afford to
do
this.
But getting together a recorder and knocking out a couple of shows. And
absolutely.
Stuff like that,
we could definitely keep that up on a regular basis. So you should probably hear some more.
Yeah, it'll be more regular than it has been in the
in the last 2 years.
Yeah. But that's okay because, in the last 2 years, there have been a lot of... A lot of
technological changes.
A lot of technological changes and a lot of, I haven't kicked out as much work as I normally would have because I've spent a lot of time trying to think about all the things that are out there and trying to figure out how with the whole market changing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it literally since the last time we did this show, borders just vanished.
Yep. Mom and pop shops are kind of disappearing.
Well, except in some places they're having resurgences. Mom and pop shops, the ones that are doing well are coming on nice.
I'm sorry,
strong.
Not the mom and pop shops are resurging. It's the big box.
Big boxes are going away. Yeah.
The big boxes are going away. The mom and pops. I misspoke there.
Yep.
Sorry. And we're seeing even Walden's and all that, they're all just dying.
Yep.
But the mom and pop shops, the ones that are actually understanding the social element are the ones that are doing fantastic. Poison Pen down here in town, changing hands. They're doing great stuff because they're not just a bookstore trying to sell you books. They're trying to sell you the experience.
What they understand, I was talking to one of the managers or owners of Changing Hands. They understand that what was once a bookstore is now an event venue with a rather large gift shop. and
that's a beautiful way to look at it.
And oddly enough, and we can talk about this in a future show, the way that I approach and the way other authors approach things at shows has shifted incredibly because now we're having to looking at retailing things. Mm-hmm. We went through a point where conventions, nobody had books. It used to be when I first went to conventions, there was always a bookseller there. They would always have your books.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a period when there were no booksellers there and nobody could get your books. And now every convention we go to, it's do you want a table so that authors are expected to bring and sell their own books?
Mm-hmm.
And that is
a stark contrast.
Absolutely. A huge change. And one of the things that you and I were talking about is one of the other changes here in terms of publishing has been crowdsource funding.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll use Kickstarter as being synonymous with crowdsource funding, knowing that there are bunches of other
places.
There's
other ones, Indiegogo. There's a ton of them out there.
Right.
Kickstarter kind of kicked it off.
right.
No pun
intended. There was one before Kickstarter. But
was
there? Yeah, there was.
Kickstarter is the one that blew up and everybody ever knew. So.
Absolutely huge.
They're going to be the Kleenex of crowdsourcing.
Pretty much.
Basically, if you think of tissue, you think of Kleenex.
And yep.
Yeah, this is going to be the same thing. It's going to be Kickstarter.
For those of you who don't know what crowdsource funding is, this is how it works. Let's say Mike, with his brand new book, decides that he wants to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
He creates a proposal and gets Kickstarter to host it, where he will then invite all of you to go and look at his proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And you can support his book at various levels. Let's say at $5, you want to buy the ebook version.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to put in a $5 support bid. Or you want the trade paperback. So at $15, you're going to say, okay, I'll support you for $15. Or you want the bundle. So you're going to go $20 to get the trade paperback book and the ebook. And so, different support levels that he would have then would help him raise money. The project will fund after, say, a month, 30 days, it depends. It can be, you know, between 3 and 6 weeks, I think, is generally the funding period. If he raises his goal, let's say it's $5,000, he gets enough support, enough people say, yes, we'll give you money to hit $5,000, the thing will fund. So when its time period runs out, everybody's credit card gets hit, and he will be given a lump of money, and then he will have to print the books and ship the books out to everybody. And this works out in this wonderful little cottage industry thing. And I've basically
you're pre-selling a book before you it's completely reversed from the publishing industry that we knew.
Absolutely.
Where you put a book out there and you hope people buy it. And hopefully there's enough people that'll buy it that you can actually make a living off of it.
And yet, if we go back to Edgar Allan Poe selling collections of poems around the Raven. This is exactly how he did it. He went to the printer in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
The printer in Philadelphia said, if you can pre-sell 50 copies, I'll print 100 for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. And he sold his books by subscription. And that's how it was done back in those days. Now, Kickstarter gets to be, and crowdsource funding gets to be a lot more fun because, you know, we just talked about the basic tiers of support where you get solely the product. Mm-hmm. Well, you can get other things to go with it, or there are two things called stretch goals and vanity goals. For example, let's say the book funds at $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike decides if we can get that total funding all the way up to $7,500, that he will include in that book a novella about the background of one of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now everybody's going to get that tacked onto the ebook if we get to $7,500, which means that since I've already bid my $20 for the package, the only way that I'm going to get that extra money is either up my bid, which is possible, or for me to go around and convince more people to go and do this.
So all of a sudden you're posting on your Facebook, you're Twittering about it, you're putting it on your page, you're talking to all your friends online and saying, hey, you need to go over and fund this so that we can get the really cool extra editions. And that is the difference, is the technology and the connectivity that we live in today, since we have so much, we're so connected, and we have so much ability to actually push and drive projects like this.
I was involved last year with a Kickstarter book anthology project called Time Travel Tales.
Mm-hmm.
We had a goal of $7,500, 30 days. When we hit day 28, we were at 17,000. So we had it exceeded our goal quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we were hitting stretch goals in the last 2 days. And we were setting stretch goals about every $2,500. In the last 2 days, we added $10,000 to that project. We finished at 28,300,
I think. Wow. Okay? That's amazing.
And it was because, as one person told the guy who was running the project, he said, look, I buy in at $5 to buy the ebook, I get $45 worth of ebooks.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I do that?
Exactly.
And so we were having, you know, just a lot of support in that particular thing. The other thing which you have, aside from the stretch goals, just in case you're not aware of it, or what I refer to as vanity goals.
Mm.
They're probably it's more politely worded bonus goals or something like that.
Whatever, but it's still...
But in your proposal, at the higher level of his project, what he points out is that, you know what, if you're willing to pay $1,000, not only will you get the ebook, not only will you get the trade paperback, but I will allow you to name a character in my novel.
Oh, yeah.
I will describe that character the way you want that character described. I will make his favorite color, your favorite, whatever color you want. You will basically tell me what that character is going to be.
Wow.
Now, as a vanity goal, there are going to be people out there. There will be someone out there that says, yes, I like your work enough, or I want to support your work enough that I will buy to have myself put into your book as a character.
Mm-hmm.
And those goals really help send, you know, projects and help fund those projects going forward. And everybody gets to support things.
Wow.
At whatever level they want to. And it's, you know, it's novels, it's games, it's all sorts of movies have been funded through this stuff.
Well, it's the synergy of it too. I mean,
right. Oh, yeah.
Because it's not just you. It's not that you're just asking for money. It's not like you're going out with your tin cup and basically standing on a corner. It's that you're creating a project, and that project evolves and grows as you go along. It starts becoming more popular. It becomes an element on Twitter. It becomes an element on Facebook. Right. It starts getting a social gathering, a group that lends to a website, that lends to more development about the world and the characters and the books itself, which makes it even more rich. And you start getting sucked into it. It basically becomes second life book.
Well, the other aspect to it, which is really, really important, is that for a lot of these books, these are books which traditional publishers, big publishers who are looking for the 50 Shades of Grey,
mm-hmm.
are not going to take on.
Right.
Because those books don't have the upside of a mega bestseller. However, those books do have an audience,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so, and we can sit down and make a decent living. We, the writers, can sit down and make a decent living funding the books this way so that we have an economy where we'll be able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing for the traditional publishers is that if a project were to hit big on Kickstarter, they could just turn around and buy the mass market paperback rights. And if they thought they could make money, they would turn around.
Oh, certainly.
And buy the mass market paperback
certainly.
Rights.
Certainly. It's not a be-all, end-all one.
No.
It's just, this is a stepping stone to bigger things and bigger projects. I mean, it's brilliant stuff.
Yeah, so it's allowing for the boutique publishing of a lot of books. It's also taking the sting out of the stigma of self-published books,
mm-hmm.
Which is also fairly important.
Well, and you make a great point there. The whole self-published thing is really fading.
Oh yeah,
that whole stigma is really finally meeting its death, which is awesome.
Right.
Because there were some good self-publish out there. It just got buried underneath the mounds and mounds of really badly done self-publish.
Well, now when we look at self-published work, we really have to look at professionally edited work,
mm-hmm.
and unedited work.
Right.
And that is, there is a huge divide there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I at conventions, people will ask me, you know, they'll say, look, I've just finished a novel. I want to self-publish it. What is the one thing I need to do?
Edit,
and get a professional to edit your book.
Exactly.
I mean, I talk to a lot of professional editors, and I will just tell anybody who's listening right now, if you've got a book 100,000 words long, you know, mm-hmm. which is a standard science fiction novel, fantasy novel length, figure that hiring a professional editor is going to cost you somewhere around $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just I remember I was at a convention in Salt Lake talking to a young man who said, look, I can't afford that sort of money. And I said, look,
you cannot afford that kind of money.
That was exactly what I said. You cannot afford to allow it to go out and unedited. So look, you know, if this is your dream to have your book published and to make money off of your book, get yourself a second job.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you know, and put aside that $1,000 to get that editing done.
Because it's shocking how different it is. I mean, I've gone through that myself. I mean, my first book went out basically practically in unedited form. It was basically unreadable. It was horrid. And luckily, once I found Dragon Moon, you know, Gwen was good enough to get me a professional editor. We went through the book and it's like, holy crap, it was a completely different book when we got done with it.
Exactly.
And it was day and night, and that book is the one that's out in form right now. And I'm ready to punch, that's the one I'm talking about punching up against.
Right. And you know, this is the other thing that teaching these classes through ASU and just in general, looking at because I've taught a number of classes and looking at student manuscripts and those things, there are going to be errors in your manuscripts that you don't have the experience to be able to see.
Right.
It's not that you're a bad writer. It's just you don't have the perspective to go ahead and look at it. Or, and a sports analogy actually works. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're writing your first novel, you're, you know, a college football player, maybe, but you're looking at entering the pro ranks.
Mm-hmm.
And people who work with the pros, people who are already there, The coaches who look at pro athletes are going to look at you and are going to see things that you will never see about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, you know, you have to set aside that money. You've got to say, look, I'm going to give it my best effort.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure you do that. And, you know, I'm here to tell you, I still have editors that look my stuff over, even the books that I published myself. I still have editors that go over them. Professional
you
editors.
Have to.
Yeah.
You have to. Yeah. I know you, I don't think you ever get to a point where you can self edit yourself. I mean, I know there's those out there that do it,
right?
But it's like, wow, that's kind of risky. I mean, even at the highest ranks, the ones that say they have to self-edit themselves, I know there's a few of them out there, and we've had these conversations before.
Right.
I think that's just stupid. I mean, it's just one more set of eyes, and it's one more opinion that you need.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't be so full of yourself that you think that you can do it perfectly
by
yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why don't we take a break, then we'll come back and we'll talk some actual writing.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, right. Well, novel concept, you know.
What a novel concept. A
little pun there. You know,
Dragon Moon Press, bringing you some of the most exciting new authors in sci-fi and fantasy. Their titles open new worlds and bring unforgettable characters to readers just like you. Bring the magic and wonder of dragons to your child with Dragon's Fire, Wizard's Flame by Michael R. Manningay. Write your own story with a complete guide to writing fantasy. Books by Dragon Moon Press, sci-fi, fantasy, and beyond. Order these titles from your local retailer or visit the website at dragonmoonpress.com.
All right, back with some more.
It's
amazing. Two shows, and I'm already like, I remember how to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of this is really... Yeah.
You sit down and talk. It's really tough.
You know, we're gonna be sore tomorrow morning because, you know, it's all the muscles we're stretching
right.
now. It'll
That's
just be
right.
horrible. So I think we should just
our podcasting muscles.
That's right. Yeah, we're gonna be getting back toned down. So I think tomorrow we should just take tomorrow off. You know, it's just a margarita day.
You know, you're probably right. We're gonna be nursing those vocal cords.
There you go. Yeah, that's so I'll just sit down and write. But I was intrigued in the last show you were talking about. You know, the taking a look at a book and the inability to tear it apart. And so starting and doing something.
And I just told you that was the most painful thing. Oh, my God, that was painful.
Well, I have to do a story, and I'm in the process of writing a story right now that's a result of a Kickstarter project. My doing a story was one of the stretch goals on a particular project. And mm-hmm. so the project called for characters or stories with really strong female characters.
Mm.
And I was making a list of what properties I already have that I could do a character and female characters that I already had that I could float over. And I remembered I had written a story way back in the 80s
mm-hmm.
of the strong female character stuff like that. And I said, well, geez, I wonder if I can just... pop that open and fix that.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I saw when I opened the file was... let's see. This is a short story. It's at 4,500 words. We're in trouble now because I never that succinct. And I went through and I looked at the story and there was no way I could fix it.
Mm.
I could see what I was doing and I could see where I had pushed it to the limit of what I possibly could do. So what I ended up doing was taking a couple of the themes out of it and a couple of the little things that I invented out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have to toss those into a brand new story in a brand new,
because everything has venue, value. It has concepts. You can always pull pieces out of it and tear it apart, dissect it and utilize those in something else. I've got one, just like that. Actually, I've been kind of toying with some of my stuff that I had done back in that day. Cause I had like 9 or 10 novels started, like about six, you know, between 2 and 6 chapters, you know,
right.
just done on them. And there was one that was set on an island and there was, what is she? She's not really a doppelganger. She's almost, I don't know, just a supernatural creature and so forth. There were, most of it was just unusable. It's just junk.
Right.
I mean, you're reading it like, oh, this is the campiest thing. I suppose I could punch it up and sell it to Sci-Fi Channel for their Saturday night, you know, B-movie
real
stuff. It'd be great for that. I mean, this would be the next Sharkzilla or something like that. I'm sure it'd be great for it.
That's a scary concept.
It was, about that level. But there were 2 or 3 really cool things. There are two characters in there. The main shipmate The main shipman, the midshipman, his name is Clark, and he is a cool freaking character. And as I was reading that, I was going, wow, why did I write all this other crap around him?
Right.
He should just be the story.
Oh, yeah,
and it's
yeah.
Okay, I could actually write a story about him and make him the hero of the story, and then this becomes just one of his crazy adventures he goes on. And it's like, right. As soon as that hit, it's like, oh, perfect. That's a brilliant idea. Yeah. There, you know, bookmark that, put a pin in that. That's something for later on when I, you know, have time and I actually want to develop that up. Mm-hmm. I've got a piece that I can develop, but same exact thing right there.
Yeah, I think, and there are two points that about that which are really critical. One, stories are all about character. And so a lot of times when you have a lot of that junk stuff generated, mm-hmm. it's because you're feeling your way around to find the character and slowly mold them into something. Mm-hmm. The other thing which is really important is that it's characters like the midshipman and others who, once you've got the setting figured out, you grow this character up from that setting.
Mm-hmm.
Those are always the most interesting characters because they're organic to the setting. Yep. A lot of times we'll have a setting and then we'll say, and I want this type of character. I'm going to fit that character in there. And the character never quite meshes with the setting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always the sidekick character, the other person that starts making wise-ass remarks, who grew up through that setting, that then is really, really valuable and is the character that just
exactly
comes to life.
That's exactly what this is. That's exactly where Clark was. He wasn't even a character I was planning on creating. It's just he was somebody there that was on the ship, and all of a sudden I gave him lines.
Right.
And those lines are really cool because of what he did.
Yep.
And because what he did, and he had a cool line, he grew and grew and became more and more. And all of a sudden he became part of the main story. And the rest of it all just, you know, became crap after that.
Well, and the key thing to do, those characters that we drag from the outside and say, okay, I want this type of character.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask yourself, what is it about this character and how they face the world now that you can trace back to having grown up in that world?
Mm.
And all too often the answer is nothing. So what you have to do then is you say, okay, well, you know, they like their porridge hot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that mean in this world? Well, in this world, we eat porridge cold because we can't afford much fuel. So they eat porridge cold, so you adjust that behavior.
Mm.
Or if they do something that you hadn't thought about in the world that you really, really like, then you find a reason in the world that state actually exists. And so what you do is you just slowly begin to meld that character's background into the background of the world,
mm-hmm.
and you fix them there. And that's something you can do in between drafts, or you do it especially as you're writing and you just don't go back and edit. You just push forward,
right,
assuming that is the absolute truth.
And a lot of time, I mean, it really does come down to the old discussion that we had many, 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 many years ago, which is you just got to write.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even if you write bad stuff, and there's always something good that comes out of the crap.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know where the next really fantastic character is going to come from. It's just like my Clark character.
Right.
You know, that story is junk. I would never in a million years even publish that piece of trash. But he is cool. And
right.
he's a character that I want to pull out. And now I've got a starting point for something even better.
Yeah, absolutely. And
you never know where those are going to come from.
Right. And it's critical to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
To once you find that spark, to play with that and to make it work. And a lot of times, again, you know, it'll feel really, really tough getting that initial stuff out. And you'll think, oh, my God, this stuff is horrible. It's just, you know, it's just not working at all. And what you find in between drafts is it just needs a little bit of polish.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the story that I'm working on now was very slow in the start because I was still feeling my way through making sure that things clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And as I began to resolve issues of, oh, yeah, if this, then that, you know, this is how this is going to go. I need this. I need that. And working it back and forth, then it begins to pick up some steam, because what was slowing me down was, you know, the plot wasn't quite clicking. But once I got all those pieces locked in, then it's easier to develop this character to make it all work.
Wow. Very cool. So,
yeah.
Wow, that went fast.
Holy mackerel, yeah.
Can you believe
it? This is, well, it used to go really, really quick. We used to knock out, what, 4 shows in an afternoon?
We'd
have a couple of interviews.
That's the other thing is our interviews. We need to find some people to talk to.
Victims, again. I think, is what
victims.
We're
looking for. Victims, yes, victims. That's it. So,
yeah, I think we can do that.
So if you folks want to hear more or you want to hear us take on a victim, we'll definitely take your suggestions and so forth. Send us email. Well, email still works. I believe it's mike@dragonpage.com, and I think it's stackpole@dragonpage.com.
Could very well be
still active. I don't know if that's correct or not. If not, mike@dragonpage will get it there, or dragon@dragonpage still works too.
Or heyyou@dragonpage.
Or basically anything at dragonpage. thumbtack@dragonpage.com. Whatever, it works. send your email in and so forth. If you have something, some comments and so forth, go ahead and record them on your computer or on your iPhone device. I mean, it's real simple nowadays. It's so easy to record your voice, save it off as an MP3 or an audio file, attach that to an email and send it to us. You know what? That's going to be the easiest, fastest way to get comments and suggestions and cool stuff to us.
That will work. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So that will do it for this one. I don't know when we'll be doing another one, but we'll try and get some more out to you in the near future. We won't take another 2 years to do that.
Excellent.
Promise.
That
promise. All right, folks. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.